Okay, we got signal. Perfect. Let's fucking get into it.
Scusa, possiamo ordinare un altro bevande?
Posso chiedere un Ugo?
Ugo? Grazie.
He wants an Ugo.
Sì.
Hello, this is Kaj, Destination Calcio. The destination is Milano. I'm here with Adriano Del Monte and Emma Tagazze. Emma Gates, good to have you boys here. I'm going to hand the mic over to Adriano. Needs no introduction. Tell us about your little escapade down under, your back, and where you're going to be tomorrow night.
It's good to be with you, boys. Good to see you. Welcome to Milano.
You got your drink coming.
So. My drink's on the way. What are we doing? We're here, Corso Garibaldi, Milano. Nice part of town, of course. Derby della Madonnina upon us. We'll be there tomorrow night. Looking forward to it. It's a good time. Back end of summer here. Culture coming thick and fast. Nima's
hey,
alive.
Here he is. Hey,
buddy. All the stars in the town. How are you, man?
Nima. We haven't met in the flesh, but now we have.
First time they're meeting in the flesh.
An Ugo.
I just ordered an Ugo.
We're ordering drinks, having a chit-chat.
Coolest man in town. But no, hey guys, it's good to be here. It's good to be here. Best time post-summer. It's just cooled down a little bit. And with the derby coming up, good feel, obviously, early in the week, Champions League at Milan-Liverpool. Tuesday, Atalanta-Arsenal Thursday. So it's all happening here.
It's been everywhere.
Been everywhere. How you guys going? You all right?
Yeah, all good. All good. Happy to be here for, obviously, the Madonnina derby tomorrow. And yeah, looking forward to it.
Bit jet lagged.
Yeah, very gently, yeah. Two hours sleep.
Supposed to meet these boys earlier, but...
Yeah, I'm hoping I can actually speak coherent sentences in this. On 2 hours sleep, but...
Well, you're Irish, so... Our Australian accents are very clear, and your Irish is all over the place.
What are you talking about? My accent is pure.
I can't understand it.
You haven't had enough sleep, buddy.
Adriano, let's welcome the man who needs no introduction as well. Nima, how's everything going?
I'm good, how are you? How's you guys? Good to be with you guys.
We're good. You're going to have to cozy up a little more. I know that we've just met, but this is how it is. Yeah. We're in Milano,
we can
eh?
Hug if
kiss
you
on
want.
The chin. Yeah. Isn't that beautiful?
We can hug.
We just ordered Adriano an Ugo.
Ugo, so
what would you like?
I think it's too early for me to go on the liquor, but...
a cup of tea or something?
No. I'll stay with you guys.
Okay, Campari.
I was at my favorite cocktail bar yesterday in Milan, Drinks. I drink different. I absolutely love that place.
What area is that in?
It's in near Lima, isn't it?
Yeah. Lima, but okay.
Porta well, Venezia. They've opened like two or three.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the one that I like the most is the one that is, I can't remember the street, but it's like right by, it's close to Lima-ish kind of thing, yeah. Porta Venezia, yeah.
Okay.
It's a really cool place, and yeah, they are amazing. It's like a speakeasy bar, but it's not really that hidden and not too pretentious. They're just really good at their cocktails.
This guy knows his stuff. I mean, how long you been here? How many times have you been to Milan now?
I think this is like 30, 40. I've lost count, honestly. Okay. The last 12 years, I've been here so many times. It feels like coming to Milan is not, it's like coming to when I go from Gothenburg to Stockholm, it's like...
He knows his way around.
I love this place. It's a cool place.
He knows the cabbies by their first names.
it's a really cool place. I love this city. It's not like traditional Italy in the sense that if you want more traditional tea, you go to Rome, you go to Florence, you go somewhere else. But it's like a metropolitan city.
Oh, that looks lovely. And you lived in Florence, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I lived in Florence. Yeah, I studied that. And I've been there quite a bit.
Sì,
anche per me.
Ok, pago io, però lui vuole ordinare pure...
Anche sì, un Ugo. Come
Ugo?
Sì, grazie.
Un altro, grazie. So you lived in Florence?
Yeah, I lived in Florence. Our family there as well. So after, I think you call it sixth form or college, you guys call it, I went to study Italian because I started that in Sweden in sixth form college. And then I wanted to continue that because, I always wanted to learn Italian better. And so, yeah, I went there for 6 months and studied there. And
how many languages are you speaking now?
Italian, Swedish, English, Farsi, bit of Norwegian, bit of German.
So if I say something like, yeah, a round of applause. Everyone here in the studio, applauso. If I say Fifan, would you understand it?
Fifan, yeah, I would.
I've got Swedish cousins.
Oh, yeah, you do. Yeah, okay, yeah, cool. That's cool.
And then not far from you, Helsingborg. I've been to Gothenburg.
Oh, you have, yeah. Yeah, Helsingborg is a Sundetsparla, they call it. It's a beautiful, small place, very pretty.
So one Ugo, two Ugos. Adriano, you live just down the road here.
Well, yes, you've come to my neck of the woods here. Thank you. It's a nice place. This is my sixth season, so I've just ticked over 5 full years here in Milan. Obviously, originally from Australia, good place, but I've been on the road the last 10 years. US, Qatar, back to the US, and then here to Italy. So long journey, but a lot of fun. You know what I do, just running around, chasing matches, chasing football, a few events. Keeping busy in, yeah, Champions League, Serie A, the Euros, World Cups, whatever's, Women's World Cup, whatever's on the agenda. So
call him the football whisperer.
Football whisperer, yeah. Thank you, that's nice. But, you know, as I said, amazing time. Now, when the derby comes to town here in Milano, you really understand, you really appreciate the cultural side of football here. And that's what I love most, growing up to an Italian family in Australia, now to understand, to see it. This is the moments of, it reminds you why you do what you do. How passionate and how much of an impact a sport can have on a culture. It's, I haven't experienced it anywhere else but here to this level, so always love it.
Qualche patatina in più.
Grazie.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's that's what I said. It's always exciting and it's a good way to kick start the season. Obviously a derby now, the season's underway, Champions League's underway, the football now is well and truly back.
It is. Culture is back.
Culture is back. Yeah. Step by step. But
no, culture is not back. Regardless of how many silly promos they do. I wish it was back.
I really, really wish it was back. But it's not back. It's not back by any stretch of the imagination. And it's a bit of a shame because the last week we've seen Arsenal. Oh, should I hold that maybe?
Yeah, hold that.
Yeah, you don't need to hold that.
Salute.
Salute.
Yeah, cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Grazie. The culture being kind of back, but yeah.
No, but it's a bit annoying because. Grazie. I was talking to. I met actually Ghazi, who you know. Yeah, he works for the Syria Arabic. And we were talking. We had lunch yesterday, or yeah, I think it was yesterday. And we were just talking randomly. Like, they have such a golden opportunity because. Arsenal and City are the two best clubs in the Premier League, arguably with Real Madrid in the world. Arsenal were lucky to get away with a point. Inter nullified City. They have everything on the pitch to promote themselves. They don't play the boring football that everyone says they do. Not that I think that was ever any truth to that, because, you know, I stand with Allegri, always. But when it comes to, you know, you have this golden opportunity to market yourself, to show who you are, and compete with the Premier League, who, I'm sorry, but it is the best league in the world, everyone understands that, but it's not particularly good. I think the level of football is generally really low. It's a lot of overpaid hype.
For the football per dollar.
Declan Rice, £100 million. In what galaxy is Declan Rice worth £100 million?
What would he be worth if he was Italian playing in Serie A? Maybe.
Well, they never. He'd be playing in Sassuolo. He'd be playing at Empoli. He'd be playing at, you know, Cagliari, something like that. You know, I understand why they bought him. I understand that, you know, with a homegrown rule and English players are much more better. And I do understand that in a system, he actually is serviceable. But he's not a £100 million player. Mm. It's very much hype. And Italy has a fantastic opportunity, but they can't get, you know, they can't get over themselves. They stand, you know, they trip over their own feet and they make hurdles for themselves, unfortunately. But things slowly change and I think they have to change. I mean, this entire situation with the stadiums, I mean, Italy are going to lose the Euros. We all know it's going to happen.
Emmett actually wrote on that last week.
Have we put it out yet or not?
I'm half asleep. I can't remember what we put out this week. But you're saying don't believe the hype about England.
No.
Is Eduardo Bove the equivalent of a Declan Rice, maybe, in terms of value?
I love Bove, but no, but seriously, my issue is more this, that they have really have every chance to take on the Premier League if they could just get their shit together.
Yeah.
And they seem perpetually unable to do just that. And it's really frustrating, it really is. Because, it's, again, a provincial side from Bergamo, they should have won against. They won the Europa League and they should have beaten Arsenal comfortably.
The powerhouses of North London.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, yeah.
Look, what's the situation with this San Siro? Like you live here. What's the word on a ground level? Emmett's put his thoughts together. We're putting a collaborative piece together as well. But your thoughts, Adriano? What's going to happen?
No, nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to happen. And that's the constant problem. What Nima's saying is exactly right. We shoot ourselves in the feet consistently. And sadly, unless that changes, nothing will change. Because we can take small steps forward, but we eventually, something bad happens, we end up going 10 steps back. And that's rinse and repeat. It's very simple, it's a very generic way to put it, but it's sadly how our league operates. And you guys are exactly right. We've, two of our clubs have just matched and could have both beaten the two best clubs in England and two of the top five clubs in the world. And they've matched them. But if you were to ask the young fan on the street if Atalanta and Inter are in the same galaxy as Manchester City and Arsenal, they would laugh at you. Because the PR dictates otherwise. And I work in the television space, and we've all discussed many times the television situation, the broadcast rights, the marketing. Sadly, and I can comfortably say this working for so many international broadcasters, but sadly, the lack of understanding and respect here for foreign markets is sadly what holds us back. Because if we had a stronger foreign rights TV deal with better respect and understanding for what those broadcasters were doing for our product, not just paying X amount, but actually how are they servicing it? How are they appealing to new fans? How are they growing our product? Yep. If we actually respected that, we would surprise ourselves how quickly we would grow. You mentioned earlier growing up and watching Serie A in the 90s in the UK. Everyone from that generation loves Serie A because it was available, it was accessible on free-to-air TV.
Yep.
Nowadays, there is nowhere to easily access a product that people aren't that interested in.
Anyway,
the problem is we have fans, but how do we appeal to new fans? Football now, there is a game every day. In some competition, there's a game every day. So the competition for attention has never been higher. So how do we compete with not only the Premier League, but other local leagues, the Champions League, and all of the other competitions globally, if we aren't selling ourselves consistently? And like Nima said, we've just matched two of the best clubs in England, but the Serie A PR has done nothing for it. So we're not going to get a better chance. What will happen is, match day four, I hope not for your sake, for Inter, but match day four, Arsenal will come here and they'll beat Inter at San Siro, and all we'll hear is, see, we're better than you. Well, you just almost lost to our provincial club a few weeks ago, but we won't hear that because the Premier League will market the product so well, as they do so often, and that beast will continue to grow. And sadly, as each year goes by, the money, we know the disparity now, they can only get stronger even if they're making mistakes. They've got the financial strength, they control the market. And look at our club, look at Milan. Look at the work, the dealings on the transfer market. We're a little tight on money at the moment. We don't have the flexibility. If we don't start now, every day we lose is a long, long step back each and every time. And that's my fear and concern, I guess, for this next step. Where do we go next? And for foreign fans, how do we appeal to foreign fans? How do we get our teams loving? How do we get fans loving Inter and Milan and Juve as opposed to PSG and Chelsea and City?
Now, what's your take, Emmett? Sorry. What's your take on Italy's chances of retaining the Euros?
Well, I mean, as you said, David, I wrote a piece about it this week because obviously I come from Ireland, the north of Ireland, and Northern Ireland has lost. Obviously, the next Euros is in the UK and Ireland. And there was an issue over a stadium in the north near Belfast. And basically, the UK government were like, OK, it's off the table. So Northern Ireland is the only part of the UK that's now not hosting the Euros. And then in the same week, a UEFA director, Michele Uva, who also used to work for the FIGC, the Italian Football Federation, essentially came out with a statement saying Italy could lose the Euros if they don't get their act together. Like, it's been a year since Italy were handed the Euros along with Turkey, and a year, what's happened? Nothing. Sure. Like, in Florence, the Artemio Franchi has been renovated, but there's missing money. They're getting money from the EU, but half of it, the EU have busy said, you can't use public funds on a sports stadium. We're holding this back. So it's going to be 55 million Euros that they need to get from somewhere. And Rocco Commisso has said he's not going to put in a single penny. Yeah, so there's going to be a GoFundMe page for, by the city of Florence to get the stadium finished.
GoFundMe. That's crazy. GoFundMe you instead.
The Champions League is the other one as well.
San Siro for the...
San Siro 26 was tipped to come to San Siro, now it's gone to Budapest. 27, there was a verbal agreement. There's going to be no chance. Because there's no way they can guarantee that it's going to be in condition, ready to meet the regulations to host.
Yeah.
So that's now going to be 11 years since San Siro hosted the 16 final, Real and Atletico.
Yeah.
that's a showpiece event. We need that. That's part of the sell.
Yeah.
And we don't have them.
And the thing is, UEFA have given Italy and Turkey a deadline of, I think it's October 2026, to basically nominate five cities and five stadiums, have them not completed, but you're working towards the goal of being completed. And so far, there's Juve Stadium.
That's it.
Roma, don't know. Milan, don't know. Naples has been nominated now. Aurelio De Laurentiis is working with an architect. But again, like, there is a real possibility that Italy will lose the Euros. And if that happens, that it's a complete embarrassment of epic proportions.
D'accordo. Maybe Cavese could be one of the hosts. Who knows? At a half decent stadium. Benevento, we went there. And your thoughts on this?
No, there's no doubt in my mind that Italy are going to lose the Euros. Let's remember how this started. It started with Italy hosting it alone. Then they weren't able to do it just alone. They brought in Turkey. And now.
Hello, Erdogan.
Well, it's. I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine who is Turkish, and I told him, it's like, when you talk about Turkey being dysfunctional, I would like you to remember that Turkey saved Italy in hosting a tournament. So that's the level of dysfunction in Italy, and it's sad because it's because there is an incredible bureaucracy and it's gridlocked at local and state level. That what needs to happen but won't is that the government has to come in, that the actual government and state have to come in and guarantee these loans. But if they do that, that's a risk. And as we all know, if they were to do that and something went awry, that would be people's careers. The problem with it, the thing that, it's not just in Italy, everywhere, but to various degrees. The reason why things never change is because the people who are running things don't want them to, because they're happy where they are. Right. They're making their money. They don't want change. Change means uprooting and risking their lifestyle. No. That's why nothing will change here.
That's the Italian way.
Yeah. No extra money in their pockets.
Yeah, that's the way.
Of course, and they might even rock the boat, and nobody wants to risk that. You know, better the devil you know, I guess. Keep things as they are. And it's a shame because we keep seeing, you know, this country has an unbelievable culture when it comes to football and history. Look, I always tell this to people, like, why is it that Italian fashion, Italian music, Italian food, Italian wine, Italian whatever, when it comes to cars, when it comes to motorcycles, they all do well, but Italian football is the most dysfunctional of all. They can't get it to work. And that's because the people who are in charge are incompetent or don't need to make things happen because they're happy where they are.
I should mention, on the subject of fashion, it is Milan Fashion Week at least. The occasional piece of eye candy here and there.
So. Oh, mate, Milan Fashion Week derbies are the best.
Emmett, keep it down, mate. Keep it in there. Zip it up.
No. Listen, like, this city is a cool city to go out in. But during Milan Fashion Week, and when it's the derby, it's like a supernova of just brilliance.
That's a good segue because I was about to order us four razor blades. negativity of dealing with some of the issues in Italian football. Let's go to the Milan derby. You're here for that, Nima. Yeah, you're an Interista, the Interista, at least on a world scale outside of Italy. To be back here, and what are you expecting tomorrow night? Is it going to be a demolition?
No, I don't think it's going to be. I think people in Sweden, we have a saying about or a term where it says derby logic, and derby logic dictates that form doesn't matter, the position in the league doesn't matter, it's one-off game, and if you add many other things to it, like the fact that Milan have lost six in a row, the fact that they got Inter won the second star in their faces at the San Siro when Milan were the home team. Pride comes in here.
Yeah.
And I don't expect Milan's players to accept losing another rolling over, regardless of how they feel about Fonseca, regardless of all the nonsense going on at the livello dirigenziale. All of that doesn't matter. It's a one-off game. I expect Milan to be very fired up for this. I don't expect many goals at all. I expect this to be pretty cagey. Because let's remember, Inter, on the other hand, yes, they had a great game against City, but that pre-season where they worked much more harder, they worked more intensely because it's a 10, 11-month season, that has taken its toll on the players and they're not fully match fit. So I don't expect to see a blowout win. Of course, Inter are favourites. It'd be insane not to say that. But I don't expect a blowout win tomorrow at all.
Summed it up beautifully from an Inter perspective. And if I was working for CBS or TNT Sports, I would hire you to create the narrative for my pubblicità in TV. Adriano, do you have a bit of a sentiment towards AC Milan?
See, I work with them, so yes, I do. But I support all the Italian clubs, especially when it comes to European football. I think Nima's spot on. I'm not expecting a blowout, but certainly Inter come in as the heavy favourites. The thing for me, having covered Milan, especially this week in the Champions League, I think the difference, you're right, Nima, the derby logic, absolutely. It is a one-off game. We know that fans, you know, that this is as much as a title. This is so significant, and especially for Milan coming in, having not won for so long, there's going to be some extra fire and determination from their end. Just seeing them up close, they just really lack that leader on the park, though. They lack that general, and that's before we even worry about the football, tactically, technically. They just lack that commander on the pitch. And I think if Inter get on top, if they get that first goal, I think then it's, I think it's curtains. I think that will be done. I think if Milan can stick in the contest, they will have a chance. But Milan really lacking an identity, lacking a leader, and I think that the bit of turmoil off the pitch may impact the players on the pitch. There are a couple of interesting post-match interviews after the Milan-Liverpool match. And who did I interview after? I spoke to the Liverpool captain and coach, but my network, we interviewed Morata and Fonseca after the match. And even in the energy, it's just that lack of belief. There's that lack of just that lack of conviction in what they're trying to do, what they're trying to build. And we've seen them struggle on the pitch. And I think with the pressures off the pitch coming in, I am expecting an Inter win. And I think, sadly, because he's a wonderful guy, I think it could be the end for Fonseca. And then it opens up another discussion of what is going on at Milan. Off the pitch, how are these decisions being made? Are the right people there making the decisions? What next? Who next? And how do they avoid this season turning into a disaster? So this is a really make or break moment. It's a decisive week for Milan's immediate future. And my prediction, I'll give an Inter 2-0 win. I just think that there's too much going on for this group of Milan players to stand tall and respond from a difficult period.
Well summarised there. I will direct people to go and check out Inside Inter, Inside Milan articles were put up. We're trying to hone in on what Fonseca is trying to do. Emmett and Dan Canciano have tackled that this week. We've also got an article, a feature coming out on what Fonseca is going to do if he does lose this, because the Pastel di Natas might not come out. I just want to give a shout out here to Chalhalala. Is it like Roxette? Is that what he was doing, Joe Cole?
What is his problem? Why can't he pronounce any word that has more than one syllable in it?
I didn't mind the rhythm that he was getting, and if we actually remix that with a beat.
No, but like what? It's like
Joe Cole, for those of you who haven't seen.
No,
it's go like, and check it out on Twitter.
When he called La Masia La Masala. I mean, it's like
have a bit of a drink when you're making a cake.
what is he on?
Bring it out.
No, I mean, I think he seems like a nice enough guy, but I mean, he can't be that stupid. Like, he puts it on and make the minimum amount of effort if you're sitting on TV.
If you're getting paid to be there.
Exactly, you're getting paid to be there to do
or avoid saying or talking about Çalhanoğlu.
The commentators are commentating for 90 minutes. You've heard them say the name 50 times. Like, look, just get closer to the
Yeah, but you
thing.
Can, you know, we can, everyone, you know, you can work on pronouncing words beforehand.
It's part of the job.
Yes, exactly. That's literally what you're getting paid for. Exactly, that is the job. You're being paid to do that. You can't even do that. Like, oh, it's like punditry is like they just sit there and say, "Oh, great tackle, great shot." Like that's not punditry. That's chiacchiere del bar.
It made me think of when I'm pretty sure it was Ashley Cole when it was a Champions League or Europa League draw. So it was a season launch draw, and like I've hosted one of them before for UEFA, for Europa League and Conference League. Now, that the year I did it a couple of seasons ago, it was in Istanbul. We were there for 5 days before, a lot of rehearsals with the legends and the guests, and you practice like, okay, Bodo Glimt, you know, Haken, teams you may not be familiar with. You learn and you try and you get better. And Ashley Cole arrived to this particular draw, not the one I was hosting, but he couldn't pronounce half the teams. And that just requires basic preparation. In our role, journalists or presenters, if you don't do that well, I'm off the TV.
That's it.
If I'm
bumbling. He's got a name in football, therefore he's going to stick around. It's not a diversity hire.
The standard respect for the clubs and the names. Absolutely. Just learn them. Çalhanoğlu is a top player. He's not a random player. Like,
Look, he's not proven in the Premier League. So.
I just find it a bit disrespectful, to be honest.
It's a little bit of ignorance there, but look, we can't blame Joe Cole overall. Is it the education system? Well,
I think, listen, I've said this many times. I think we should have a 24-hour radio station with Joe Cole and Antonio Cassano and Warren Barton just sitting to just share thoughts on the world, just solving, you know, the three of them solving world problems, one problem at a time. I think you'd raise enough, if you made that pay-per-view, I think you'd raise enough money to balance the budget. But that's neither here nor there. No, I do think it's a bit disrespectful.
Is this what you call on the Italian football podcast premfacery?
Premfacery, yeah. But I think with Joe Cole, I think it's also just he's Joe Cole. I don't think he does. Does he even know what day of the week it is? Like, I get the feeling that he just rolls out of bed and he's like, oh.
His agent gives him a call.
He's called Joe Cole. If there was anything longer in his name, he couldn't pronounce it.
Giuseppe Cole. Okay, let's.
I want to talk to you about Milan a little bit, because I think this is a really interesting topic. Because I was talking to a friend who works at Milan, and I was posing the question to him. I can't remember the last time there was this much chaos at Milan. On and off the pitch, I really can't. Not even during after Berlusconi or during the banter era, there wasn't, at least at the directorial level and at the structural level, it wasn't this much chaos. I really can't remember the last time it was like this, because, you know, you have, okay, Fonseca, it was always going to be teething issues. Obviously, I was not in favor of that hire. I thought it was a mistake. But I'm actually now in a position where I feel bad for Fonseca. Yeah. I feel he's been completely left out, hung out to dry. He's not being, no one's helping him, no one's defending him. He feels completely left alone, left out, like left, you know, left out to dry, hung out to dry, and there's no, it doesn't feel like this Milan, this dirigencia, these directors, they don't, who does what? Whose role is to do what? Who represents Milan? Who's there to protect, like we saw with Maldini when he was there, how he protected Pioli, even off camera with things you don't see. Who does those things at Milan? I don't think there's anyone there.
Is it about ownership? Who's going to take ownership and responsibility here, Adriano?
I think so, and that's why I'm saying I don't think the derby impact will have an impact, because the turmoil and chaos off the park is at a level we've not seen, even in their weaker years. It's correct. Who is steering the ship? There's no leader on the park, that's for sure. Off the park, who is in what role? Did you guys see the interview on Sky with Zlatan?
Yeah, and Boban.
So I was right beside Sky. They spoke to him pre and post, and it was just... I've always loved Zlatan, but I mean, that character and that... That's for a different role. When you're in that position, that's not the role. That's not the character. No, grazie, caro. He's trying to sell us some roses, but
welcome to Italy. Just in case you didn't know where we were.
Just so you know, because I'm always in this area, I know these guys personally as well. So anytime you come here, I'll gift you a rose, no problem.
You're taking commission here. How much is he getting?
Side hustle.
Yeah. Actually, is that your? This is not one of your relatives selling the roses.
No. Very good.
It's a family business, huh?
La prossima, ciao. So it's that leader. You haven't seen a leader in that, in Zlatan's position, act that way. And I don't really warm to that. I've warmed to Zlatan's character in other fields of work, but does that work? Is he really the leader? Does he really know what it takes to do the job he's trying to do effectively? What is his job?
Exactly.
It's all of these questions, and Zlatan being the character he is, if his job is here and then there's the CEO, maybe does he have more power than them? Are they supposed to call the shots, but then they're tentative to step on his toes? They've just lost that clear direction, and I think that has now seeped into all aspects, and I agree exactly what you said. Fonseca, it's as if he's alone, and no one's defending Fonseca, who is... And again, I bring it back to the human side. He's a great guy. He's a lovely individual, really kind, really generous, and always has been. I did work with him when he was at Roma as well.
What happens to nice guys in Italy?
We're going to find out Sunday, aren't we?
No, well, like, I think the thing with the Boban interview, to me, more than anything, what became pertinent and so clear for me was how out of his depth Zlatan is in this role. Boban pulled his pants down, just showing how you're supposed to. Because Boban, lest we forget, Boban was there. He left. But he showed how he basically just asked him questions that Zlatan couldn't answer. And what he needs to understand is he's not a player anymore. Right. At a player, when you're criticized, you go out there, you score a hat trick, that's over. You can come up and say, I'm a lion, I'm a god and all that. That's fine. But as a director, you can't get away with that. And that's what he doesn't understand. In Italian football, directors have a very specific and very important role. And you have to be able to win everyone over, not just do everything behind the scenes, but also show that you are ready to take that part. And what became so painfully evident, I love Zlatan. It was, I just felt like he is out of his depth. He's in a role that I don't really think he knows what it is. I think he wants to be, they were very obvious, clear when he announced him that he was going to be a senior advisor to Redbird. He's going to be learning on the job, blah, blah, blah. We work as a team. We make the decisions together, collectively, all of that. But and there was always going to be teething issues and blah, blah, blah. But this is not good. I mean, everyone I've spoken to, he's, for the first time in his career, he's becoming a bit of a laughingstock in Milan. That's never happened before. Everyone you talk to, whether they support Inter, Juve, Milan, whatever, they look at him with like that now. Like, it was embarrassing.
Very, I guess, having that kind of personality as a player and being able to respond to, journalists that are asking cheeky questions. Over the years, we've all seen those collages of him getting one up on the media, which is great. We all love that. But coming into a role with that kind of personality, and I guess if Milan were in winning form, it'd be easier to step into that role. Yeah. But when they're losing, and then I'm not sure if he's taken it personally or not, but I guess it reflects upon the hierarchy of the club. Look, let's get away from that negative. Let's talk about favorite Milan Inter goals, because I think that's something we should do. We all love the derby, the Madonnina. It's not far away. To what, a couple of stops here from here. You're the local here.
Yeah, how far is it? You just go from Garibaldi and you're 10 minutes on the metro, and you're at San Siro.
That's another destination which we'll cover. And Emmett, you've written an article on the best goals in your opinion. Can you kick us off, and then we'll all tell you our favourite derby goals? I've got a feeling his is going to be in black and blue, but yours might be in red and black. I'm the neutral here. I guess you are as well. Kick us off with it.
All right. So the one that springs to mind is one by Clarence Seedorf for Milan in 2004. It was a 3-2 Milan win, and Seedorf picked up the ball like on the left-hand channel, was looking for a teammate, nobody was forthcoming, so he just ran in field and put his foot through it, and the ball just cannoned into the corner of Francesco Toldo's goal from around 25 yards out. Classic Seedorf, like, he could hit a long-range racket, and it ended up winning the game 3-2. It was the year Milan won the Scudetto. It was Ricky Kaká's first season, Shevchenko would win the Ballon d'Or. It was peak Ancelotti Milan. So that was probably off the top of my head, that is my favourite goal in the derby. It was just, and obviously Seedorf played for both teams. But yeah, it was such a good goal. And he was so far out, hardly any backlift, but he didn't need any backlift. He could just rocket them in from anywhere. And yeah, that's...
Off the top of your head, what other goals did you mention in your piece?
So off the top of my head, I mentioned one from Gianluigi Lentini from 1992, Maurizio Ganz from 1987, Antonio Candreva.
In the glorious years.
Antonio Candreva from the banter years for Inter.
Yeah. Rocking that one, top corner, wasn't it?
Yeah. One from Rafael Leao, and one from Luigi Di Biagio. From 2001.
What year was the Leao one?
2022.
That's
yeah. He was unplayable that night. He scored two, set up one for Giroud.
Oh. Yeah,
phenomenal.
That's right.
And one of your mate, Hakan Şükür, in 2001 as well.
What a goal.
Yeah, like a volley, first time from Seedorf, who was playing for Inter at the time. So yeah, they're some of my favourite derby goals. What about you, Adriano?
Very nice. Look, I'm going to give you a bit of recency bias. The Leao one, certainly in 22, that's the one I was after. Wonderful. The reason I talk about these more recent goals, I said off the top, just the extra special feeling for me personally, just being here on the ground and covering them. Just
bringing myself closer to growing up in Australia, to an Italian family, and watching this, particularly this match, on the TV at all hours of the morning, and actually coming here and being there and seeing them, these ones will stay with me forever. And being completely neutral, the one that was the most special moment for me, and then it was, let's just say, the goal that killed the tie, was just the Champions League tie, the semi-final. Obviously, Inter winning 3-0 on aggregate. Lautaro scored the second leg, the 1-0. That was Inter's home game. That, for me, just encapsulated why I'm so passionate about the sport. Now, that particular Lautaro's goal was not the greatest goal in history. But at that moment, Inter defeating Milan in a semi-final of the Champions League, people often ask me, what's one of the best things you've covered or where you've been lucky to be? And I've been very lucky to see a lot of really cool things. But that, for me, I'm not an Inter supporter, but that was the two clubs in my city doing battle 6 days apart, two matches, Champions League semi. It doesn't get any better. And the passion, the joy, and then obviously, conversely for the Milan fans, the exact opposite. Just what that means and what that meant to these people. When that Lautaro goal went in, I've never really experienced euphoria and seeing that amongst a crowd like that. And it was just truly special. And that's what football's all about. And so passionately, I'd love to see our Italian clubs back there always. Maybe it won't happen again, I don't know. But just to experience that whole 6 days and immerse myself in what it meant to this city, capped off with that goal, that winner, and that moment was... there's no words for it. No words for it. So hopefully some more special goals this weekend. But those moments for me in my city have been the most special I've ever seen.
Lovely. Some individual magic we need, and some individual magic that I remember was Maicon. He scored a couple of really good derby goals, but one was that 1-2 down the right wing where he's cut in and then he's just nestled it in the far left corner down low. But the one that I really love is that long range bullet from one side outside that right half space, and he just picks out that top corner, the far left corner. My favorite. And I'm a neutral, not an Inter or Milan fan. I respect them both for what they are. And this guy's a poet, the way you see the passion coming out of him, emanating out of him. Let's pass it over to Mr. Interista over here.
No, look, I was at that game that Adrian, I think we met, didn't we?
Yes.
I was on the pitch. I was invited by a friend who invited me to do the whole VIP experience with him. So, yeah, that was the day that Eros Ramazzotti came up to me and said, you look like my friend, Jim Belushi. Out of the blue, I was like, what? And he was funny. No, it was really funny.
And the show with that theme song.
Yeah. No, but listen, that the atmosphere, the Euro Derby is special when that happens. And that atmosphere that Adrian is talking about, you could feel it. I landed at Milan that morning. You could touch it in the air. There was something in the air. The usual excitement. People were so nervous. When you went to Duomo, there was no one there. Yeah. Everyone was too nervous. Like it was literally in the air. Normally in derbies, it's always singing and dancing and blah, blah, blah. But that day was too tense. It was too tense. You could literally feel it in the air. But the atmosphere was unbelievable then. Yeah. But the best goals, I mean, I was there for the Maicon 4-2, the one that you thought, the Rocket, when Milito scored 3 and Zlatan scored 2. So, I mean, if I were to go with the best one that I've seen live, it has to be Maicon. But if I'm going to talk about the best ones that I remember, look, Francesco Moriero, the Derby d'Andata, 97-98, the most beautiful cross pass I think I've seen in my life. The way that he bends it round to Ronaldo, who takes it one touch and lobs it over. That's poetry in motion. It was one of the most beautiful, you know, bend it like Beckham. No, bend it like Moriero. It was that season. He was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. Moriero was just, I mean, that season, Moriero had the season of his life. And that game as well. But look, otherwise, best team goal. Look, 4-0, the first goal, the little triangles that the Mourinho 09, the 4-0 one, the 4-0 derby, which Thiago Motta scored. La Fiammata del Drago, the 4-0, Dragan Stankovic. Marcus Thuram, last season. I mean, some of these belters are the ones that stick with me. But yeah, I'd say my favorite derby has to be probably the 4-2 one because of Ibrahimovic's magical goal, Julio Cesar and him going back and forth. Milito scoring a hat-trick. It was the Tite dominant Milan Tifo. I mean, it was that experience was just insane.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've heard it all now. We've got some of the great goals of the Milan Derby. The Madonnina is on tomorrow night. We might get final tips. I know that you're thinking a 2-0 win.
Yeah, I stick with a 2-0.
Again, that's Inter.
To Inter.
To clarify.
Yeah, to Inter. I just think Milan just don't have enough. Maybe 10.
Not even a goal?
No. I just don't
Pulisic.
See...
Pulisic? American fans out there, nothing?
No.
We don't have any Aussies in the bloody lineup, do we?
No, I wish the best for Milan, but no. This is a different level, and I think Inter will be as eager as ever to go. And there's, you know, Milan will come, it's a derby, but it's also a derby for Inter. Inter are playing at another level. Nima, I think this season is, again, all on the cards, me, for Inter.
Back-to-back's tough.
Yeah, back-to-back stuff, but in Europe as well. And we can talk about it another time, but Inter last season Champions League, that Atletico match, that it was there. This was all there for a deep Inter run again. So I'm tipping a big season for Inter on all fronts. I think they're just settled. Inzaghi's got them playing top football. You saw the words of Guardiola post-match, what he said about Inzaghi and Inter. There's so much respect for this club. And so they're just a class above tomorrow. And Milan's turmoil off the pitch will just be too much to handle.
Yeah, the machine hasn't stopped. Emmett?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Adriano. I think we're going to see nothing other than an Inter win. I'd say maybe 2-1 because you still have Leao that can do something, you know, in the moment. But I do think it's going to be a clear Inter victory. You know, it's not going to be 4-5, but I do think it's going to be a dominant display because obviously we talked about the chaos of Milan and Inter. Just Inzaghi has got them playing really well. They're playing their system. They know the system. No matter the personnel change, I just think we're going to see an Inter win no matter what.
Okay, I'm going to go for some Davide Calabria magic here. I mean, is he the Milan Macon? Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's missing the game.
Breaking news here.
Yeah, I saw that just before we came. Calabria misses the game.
And what's happened to him? He's just not. He's called in sick.
Yeah, no, I just think he's
in sick. I don't want to be part of the 4-0 demolition.
No, I think he's injured or something. I just noticed it in my feed that he's missing the game. He's out from tomorrow.
Does that mean
Emerson Royale is going to come in, and that's going to secure the whole thing up defensively?
Lovely. What are the chances of Camarda getting a call up? He didn't play for the under 23s the other day, so maybe he's in the squad. Who knows? Okay, I'll say 3-0. I'm going 3-0. Me Inter.
Listen, are you asking me? I mean, I love when people say that. Like, I differentiate between what I think is going to happen, what I want to happen, to happen.
You got to live in reality.
Exactly. What I want to happen is Inter to win the quintuple every year and Juve to be in Serie C where they belong. But together with a reputation and the rest of that crime family.
Next episode.
Yeah.
There is a team down there in Girone C, I believe. Juve under 23.
Yeah.
Juve Stabia, Serie B.
Yeah, I know. They can be there, you know, they can be there. But that's not you know, realistic. So that's not going to happen. I think that I actually think that Inter, yes, of course, are favorites, but I expect a draw. I expect Milan to plug the holes. I don't expect Milan to do anything other than do damage control and plug the holes and try to have something to build from. Because despite everything we've spoken about, all the chaos and dysfunction that is currently at Milan, this is a special city in the sense that a derby result forgives many sins. It creates lots of workspace for everyone to calm down. And a draw against Inter would give them that because it would give them something to work from. So I think they're just going to go in there and it's going to be a battle. They're going to plug holes. I don't think it's going to be very many goals. So I think it's 1-1, 0-0, something like that. I really don't expect them to... And also, given, you know, they have to bounce back. Inter, you know, they've got Champions League coming up as well. They're playing every 3 days. There's not many, lots of time left to recover. So, no, I don't expect a blowout win at all. But, of course, Inter are massive favourites. It would be a bad result for Inter if we're just talking on form and quality and where they are. It would be a bad result for Inter if they don't win it. But this is the derby, and the derby has its own kind of dynamic to it. And I think Milan will just want to not lose, just to put an end to that talking point of 6 in a row, 7 in a row, 8. Do you know what I mean? They just need that to stop.
Yeah.
So I think a draw.
The blood is in the water, maybe, and I guess neutrals are expecting an Inter win. You never know with Milan because they could come out. Look, their Serie A form going on your last game, 4-0 over Venezia, but so they might bring a little bit more confidence. Liverpool's always a tough game. We're going to leave it there, I think, because Adriano's going to get going. We're all going to be at the Milan Derby tomorrow. Nima, thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. Adriano.
Grazie, always a pleasure, guys. Keep up the good work.
We'll all see him on the touchlines anyway. And Emmett, I'll be seeing you later.
Yeah, absolutely.
Juve Napoli later.
Yeah. Juve 2-0.
We'll end it there. Anyway. Juve 2-0 my ass.